Well, good morning. It's Friday on My Car Guru, and we welcome in the car guru, Lenny Lawson.
It's been a great month in retail sales. I've been looking at the car dealer reports for months to date, and dealers are still selling cars. It's just amazing to me because inventories are so light. You drive around East Tennessee, you go to any dealership, just about, you're going to see a lot of asphalt.
Yeah.
And not a lot of cars.
Mm-hmm.
And dealers are scrambling to get it. You know, now would be a great time to sell your car. If you got an extra one in the garage, call me. I'd like to make you an offer.
Call me.
Yeah. I mean, we're scrambling to buy cars, and we're paying top dollar for them. What's top dollar, Tim? What is top dollar? When somebody says, I'll pay you top dollar for it, what does that mean?
Well, that means they want it pretty bad, and they're willing to pay a price that would probably top out at what the value is.
Yeah, I mean, top dollar, is that retail? Is that wholesale? You know, what is the difference? Well, wholesale is what dealers try to buy cars for, and retail is what they try to sell them for.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And what do you want for your car? Retail, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to pay retail for stuff. Either you want retail for yours, and you want to buy theirs for wholesale.
That's right.
But such an attitude will get you nowhere right now, because used car values are skyrocketing and dealers are charging what the market will bear. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you let's say that you had a vehicle and you were wanting to sell it right now, well, you could post it on Facebook Marketplace, right?
Mm-hmm.
First, you need to find out kind of what it's worth. So you might go to Kelley Blue Book. Or you might KBB.com, or you might go to NADA and look up values, Edmunds.com. There's all kinds of different things out there where you can get values, but you really don't know. Tim, I've talked many times about what determines the value of a used car, and its price. I mean, price. That's what we're trying to determine.
Mm-hmm.
It is mileage, condition, and market demand. Now, market demand is basically, you know, what cars are bringing at the auction, you know, what they are, what people are paying retail for vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we just try to gauge where we could buy a vehicle at and then turn around and make a profit on it. So that's kind of where the market comes from. Condition, a lot of people get hung up on condition because they don't really understand what we mean. Mm-hmm. Well, my car's clean, right?
Mm-hmm.
I keep it vacuumed out. You know, what kind of shape are the tires in? I traded for a car the other day, a set of tires $4,000 to $3,000 for this car.
Goodness.
It's a Z06 Corvette, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And very expensive tires. And so that's installation and everything. And so when you trade for a vehicle, you have to make sure you don't have to immediately turn around and put tires on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what shape are the brakes or are the brakes in?
Mm-hmm.
Does it have any dents and dings? Has it ever had any paint work? When you pull the Carfax, does it show accidents? Another side note, folks, don't rely on Carfax. A lot of people swear by it. They think if they pull the history on a car and it's clean according to Carfax, that they don't have anything to worry about. Such is not the case. Carfax will get you burned if you're not careful.
Mm-hmm.
You still have to look at the car and consider the condition of the car. It's very important that you do that before you leap. So let's just take our first break, and I'll be back in just a second.
All right, we'll be right back. All right, we're back here for My Car Guru on this Friday morning, reaching the end of the work week here.
Yeah, since I'm at the Amelia Island Concours d'Elegance right now, I thought I would talk about the history of the automobile.
That's nice.
Is it?
Well, there's a lot of history on,
there's a lot of history
on
there.
Display.
You know, electric vehicles are not a new thing.
No.
Yeah, the first automobiles actually ran on steam and electricity. You may also be surprised to learn that the first vehicles were not developed in the late 1800s. They were actually developed in the late 1700s.
That's phenomenal, isn't it?
Those first vehicles were powered by steam. Now, it was an energy source that had been used for many years to power trains. However, it wasn't until the 1870s that steam power became more practical for smaller vehicles and equipment. So despite improvements, there were still a lot of shortcomings. steam-powered vehicles took a very long time to start up, and the range was limited. See, they were talking about range, you know, back then. In the early 1800s, inventors around the world began building electric-powered buggies. A few decades later, inventors in England and France created vehicles that were much closer to modern-day EVs. In 1890, a guy named William Morrison built the first electric car in the U.S. The car could go 14 miles an hour and fit six people.
What year was that?
What year? That was in 1890.
Okay.
Yep. The car could go 14 miles an hour. That's blazing. Of course, the roads were all dirt, you know, and there were ruts and stuff like that. It was very rudimentary, but it got interest going in America. Within 10 years, a third of the vehicles in the U.S. were electric. Nobody knows that, but they do now. Mm-hmm. Electric vehicles were popular because they weren't as difficult to start as steam and gas combustion engines. You could actually hurt yourself starting the other two engines.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of arms were broken trying to crank, get a Model T going.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, EVs were quiet and didn't emit any smelly air pollution. They were less offensive to the horses, too.
Yeah.
Horses weren't scared of them.
Mm-hmm.
Except they would look at the vehicle curiously saying, okay, how come none of my compadres are pulling that thing? It didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Now, while some of the very first cars were powered by steam, dating back to the 1700s, it was actually Carl Benz. Recognize that name?
Mm-hmm. Mercedes-Benz.
In 1885, who actually invented the first gas-powered car, which he later received a patent for in 1886. His first car it was kind of odd. It didn't really look like a car. It looked like an elongated tricycle, and it sat two people. It had three wheels. Four-wheel gas-powered cars were later introduced, and that didn't happen until 1891.
Mm-hmm.
So we're progressing through time. The invention of gas-powered automobile marked the beginning of the vehicular evolution. So that's when the innovators started. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the early car builders were wagon builders. Okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, they were building carriages and things like that. So they already had that infrastructure. They just had to figure out how to attach a motor and get it to the wheels. And so some people did that well. Some did not. You know, the first cars didn't have windshields, didn't have doors, didn't have turn signals.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't even have a round steering wheel because they didn't, you know, they hadn't figured that out yet. Just think. I mean, they were using sticks and they were, you know, slapping horses with leather, you know. I mean, who's going to come up with a round wheel to turn, you know, to change the direction? It was like a tiller, more or less.
Yeah.
That controlled their direction. It wasn't until Henry Ford's 1908 Model T that automobiles basically started to resemble what we're familiar with today. And thanks to Henry's invention of the assembly line, the gas-powered Model T could be mass-produced and become affordable for the general population. Ford had been working with Thomas Edison to create a better battery for electric vehicles, but the success of the affordable Model T completely stopped that. You know, that's a factor now. I mean, the internal combustion engine is our accepted mode of transportation. We feel comfortable with it. We like it. When we run low on gas, we pull in the gas station. 5 minutes later, we're gone.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And we can look at and know approximately how far we can go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the electric vehicle, too many unknowns for a lot of folks. Now, the innovators, you always have these early adopters. Are you an early adopter?
Not really.
Of technology?
No,
do you?
Not really.
Like when the new iPhone comes out, do you say, man, I got to have that?
No, I never say that.
Yeah. You still using a flip phone?
I am using an iPhone, but it's a 10, I think. So it's...
You're behind.
Few models.
I'm 11 plus. I haven't gone for the 12 yet.
I think it's a 10. maybe it's a 9.
The high cost of gasoline and pollution concerns have really helped electric vehicles make a comeback, and Edison would be happy to know that the latest EVs have batteries that will go up to 400 miles now.
I'm all for it. Get it up there to 5 or 6, and I'll be on board probably.
But now, from the 1930s, let's just go from there up. Along with mass production came features. Mm-hmm. We love features. Mm-hmm. We Americans love our features. Some of the first feature being a speedometer.
Mm-hmm.
Once cars started going faster, people said, hey, I wonder how fast I'm going.
Yeah. Then that way, when the policeman pulled you over and asked you how fast you were going, they could tell you.
Yeah. You know, another thing that was important is they say, well, since cars are going faster, I'm tired of hitting bumps and being thrown into the field. So they invented seat belts to hold you put. And then they're driving down the road, you're getting all these speeds, and it's really cold, you know, because the wind is just blowing in your face. And, and some guy said, well, what if we put a piece of glass out here in the front? What are we going to call it? I said, let's call it a windshield.
It shields the wind, so let's call it a windshield.
Yeah. And then, as a result of a really early Indianapolis 500, they invented something called a rearview mirror. So that was a feature.
You could actually see who was behind you.
Yep. Believe it or not, the first turn signals weren't added to a car until Buick did it in 1939. That's even after the first car with electric windows and air conditioning, believe it or not. The cars started to get fancy with power steering in 1951, cruise control in 1957, three-point seat belts in 1959. And when do you think the first heated seats came about? See, I would have never guessed this. I would have thought it would have been in the 90s.
Yeah, but you're probably going to tell me sometime in the 60s.
Yeah, 66.
Yeah.
Yeah, in 73, Oldsmobile installed the first passenger airbag in their Tornado. Remember the Tornado?
Mm-hmm.
What else was unique about the Tornado when it first came out?
I don't remember.
GM's first front-wheel drive car.
Oh, was it the first front-wheel drive?
Was the Tornado.
About that.
Over 20 years later, in 1998, the federal government required that all passenger vehicles come standard with dual front airbags. Now they have airbags all over the place. They have knee airbags, head curtain airbags, airbags in the seat belts for the rear passengers, airbags, you know, to protect the people in the back seat, and all that's great. In the late 80s and early 90s, keyless entry systems became the big deal. Electric door. Do you remember the first time you could push a button and your car would unlock?
I was trying to remember the first vehicle I had like that. Probably that was a, I think it was a 92 model.
I think it was my mom's 1990 Caprice.
Okay.
That she had.
I think ours was the 92 Pontiac, the first one I had that did that.
You know, some other things that proliferated in the 80s and 90s were, of course, but basically power windows and door locks become standard on just about everything. Our lowest priced vehicles already have power windows and locks, you know. Sunroofs became popular. Something that I wish had never been invented was the T-top.
Yeah.
They would not leak until you took them out the first time and put them back in.
That's
and from
right.
then on, you're doomed.
Yep.
I mean, I was a service advisor back then, unfortunately, and GM was building some real junk. In retrospect, I mean, back then I said, well, this is great stuff, you know. But oh my gosh, the leaks that we had, the drivability issues that we had, the transition from you know, when we were still using carburetors and they were slapping all these emission controls and smothering the horsepower, finally they came out with throttle body fuel injection and things started to improve a little bit as far as drivability, you know.
I'm wondering the first sunroof, moonroof, or whatever, I bet the very first ones had leak problems, don't you?
Yeah, I remember when we used to install sunroofs, and they were always glass. You know, it'd just be a pop-up glass sunroof. We'd send them down to Knoxville, and this guy'd get a chainsaw out and, you know, and cut the whole top out. The thought of doing that now is don't ever do that. You know, you see these aftermarket sunroofs, but that was a popular thing. I mean, we were selling a lot of Mazda trucks, B2000s, and these... and lowering them, you know, and
cutting
putting stripes
them,
on them, putting
them
fancy
and stuff,
wheels,
yeah.
and a lot of those guys and gals wanted sunroofs put in them. So we'd send them down to Knoxville, and they'd get out the rotary saw and start creating sparks, you know, and cutting through that headliner. And they did a pretty good job. Those didn't leak as bad as the factory sunroofs did.
Yeah, yeah.
Factory sunroofs was an unproven science back then, but now they're pretty good. You know, that brings us to modern day cars with Bluetooth, hard drives, advanced safety systems, GPS, Wi-Fi, even the ability to parallel park. This Lincoln I'm driving right now has will park itself. You know, I just take my hands, it even looks for a parking place, and when it sees one, it says, okay, Lenny, I'll take over. And so I push the button, I take my hands off the steering wheel. I still have to operate the gas pedal and the brake pedal, but it actually backs out, and that steering wheel's just spinning around, you know, and it just pulls right exactly perfectly into the spot without scuffing my expensive wheels, and does a wonderful job. So, you know, with technology advancing, it's more important than ever to keep up with the technology and the driving enhancements that the cars are offering us now. I still think we're a long way, Tim, from hands-free driving, and I just don't see it being a viable thing in the near future until technology dramatically improves. There's just too many things that the human eye can see and we can react to quicker if we'll just pay attention and not look at our phones while we're driving.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about the 8-track. Wasn't it the Mustang the first to have the 8-track?
I don't know who was first. This 76 Buick Electra 225 that I recently bought has an 8-track.
Has an 8-track.
And I still have my 8-tracks. Mudslide Slim.
James Taylor.
Yep.
Yeah,
America.
I remember the first car that I saw with an 8-track in it, and I thought, and it was a big car. I think it was my uncle's, if I remember right. We're just uptown.
I'm thinking that I opened that box the other day, looked at those. I've got the James Taylor, Carole King, Carly Simon. I was pretty much in that folk rock kind of a venue. America. What was the other one? There's one from Chicago. And, I hate to admit this one, Neil Diamond. He had this live album called Hot August Night. I don't know if you remember it. But he's got long hair, and he's got his shirt unbuttoned all the way down to his navel. But it was pretty good music on there.
And you were saying, she got to move my cherry.
Yeah, there you
go. She got to move my cherry, baby.
Yeah, thank goodness for technology. We've come a long way since horse and buggy and steam engines, but we've got a long way to go, probably.
Yeah, I used to have a lot of 8-tracks, too, but they disappeared over the years. I'm not really sure what happened to them, to be honest. But I had probably close to 100 of them at one time.
I don't think they're worth a lot, are they?
Not worth hardly anything. You can still find them too much. If they were rare, you know.
Of course, that tape's getting pretty old now. I'd say
if you put it in there, it'd probably just disintegrate and fall apart.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll take our final break, and we'll be right back. All right, now that I've got the song Cherry Cherry by Neil Diamond running through my head as an earworm, we're back to wrap up the final portion of My Car Guru on a Friday.
You know, it is Friday. A lot of people go car shopping on Saturday. Memorial weekend is coming up soon, right?
Next weekend, yeah.
And, you know, that's a very traditional, you know, dealers are open on Memorial Day. Most of them are, at least sales departments are. And so, you know, there's something that folks need to be aware of. Used car values are up. New car prices are up. Rebates and incentives are way down. Okay, so there's still this huge demand, and of course, basically rebates are designed to compensate for age of inventory. You know, vehicles that have been around for a while,
so that folks will snatch them off the lots. And
So you know, if you've got a vehicle that's got a $3,500 rebate, it means they're not selling. Or there is a competitive pressure on that particular manufacturer to compete with somebody whose cars are selling better, you know, and maybe they have a bigger rebate. You know, there may be a very low day supply of a particular vehicle, but it may have a big rebate on it because the direct competitor has a big rebate on it. You know, so it is used as a competitive tool. Right now, inventories are way down, so rebates aren't that big of a factor. But you can still save money on a car. The best way to save money is to get full value for what you're trading in, okay? Let's say that you're looking at a Hyundai or a Kia Telluride, one of the hottest vehicles on the market. They aren't going to discount that car. Matter of fact, it's very likely they'll charge over MSRP for that car.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to just make sure if they're charging you over MSRP, they need to pay you a retail price or a good price for your trade-in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there's any rebate at all, it will be like maybe $500. But if there's special financing out there, don't let them, you know, put you into a high-interest loan. When I say higher interest, anything over 5%. You know, because you can go to Eastman or different credit unions and get really cheap money right now for a long term. So just pay attention to all of those things. And then when you get into the finance office, don't let them hammer you to death with products that you don't need or want. A big problem in the car industry now is something called payment packing. We've talked about that. That's mm-hmm. where folks are closed on a monthly payment. And then when they get into the finance office, they realize that it's got an extended warranty in it included. It's got gap insurance. It's got tire and wheel protection, maintenance agreement. And you didn't agree to any of that stuff. But they are so nice. And they say, well, this is all included in that payment. Always never fail to ask, what would it be without that stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And make sure that the sale price doesn't change. Get a printout of the bill of sale
mm-hmm.
and take a look at it. Say, most people don't do that. Sometimes they call it the buyer's order or the bill of sale. That will break down the transaction and what you're actually paying. Mm-hmm. So have them print that out. Say, print me out a buyer's order or bill of sale. Let me look at it. Go down through there and look at all those numbers down through there. And if you see any add-on numbers that look like warranty product or something like that, you know, ask for the details on that before you. I mean, that number, Tim, could be $3,000 or $4,000. It could be $5,000
mm-hmm.
extra that you're paying for the car that you didn't know anything about because you were closed on a $500 a month payment. So anyway, car dealers don't like me to talk about that. Most don't care because they don't practice payment packing, but there are several that do, and you just need to watch out for it.
Right.
Be aware. Keep your eyes open.
Do your due diligence.
That's right.
All right. That'll do it for My Car Guru for this Friday and for this week. We'll talk to you again on Monday.